This is Call with Dad's podcast, where today's issues, concerns, and joys of being a dad are discussed, with your hosts E.A. Maynard and Mr. Pancake sharing their views, experiences, and all things they know. Join the journey with us. Welcome to Call with Dads, more than a podcast or a website, but your home for a community of dads who want to be better. Now let's get started.
Finding the pediatrician, one of the best things that their pediatrician ever said to us was, you know, I'm an expert in medicine, but you guys are experts in your kids. So everything we do is a collaborative effort because, you know, if I'm saying or you recommending something that you don't think is right for your kid, then let's talk about and figure out what is right. And so, you know, that's a big part of it. And that's honestly, you know, kind of thinking about the topic of the day, that's a big issue with education right now, because, you know, for instance, I have like 130 kids that come through my classroom in every single day. And it would be unrealistic to think that I would be an expert, each one of them, you know, and how to meet their needs, 100%, you know. And there's certain generalities that work for most kids, but each kid is unique. And the problem is that they're also not at home most often nowadays. And so that's therein lies the challenge of you right now. So,
well, you know, let's do this. With Mr. Pancake being delayed, I don't know where he's at. Let's actually get started, because that brings up a good point of, with the homeschooling and all, me being a homeschooler, I homeschool my son. And once my daughter's to the point where I feel she's right to be homeschooled, I'm taking her out of daycare and homeschooling her, just because it's hard to homeschool and run a daycare at the same time.
Sure.
You as a teacher, now help me understand this. Do you do public school or private school? Because I thought you said public, but I don't remember for sure.
Yeah, because for sure. I teach public school. I'm in the middle of my 15th year in public education.
Okay. So, and with three kids, you've been a teacher at their schools the whole time, correct?
Yes.
And now, let me ask this. So, 15 years of teaching. Now, when I went to school, and this was, I would hate to age myself because I can't remember exactly how many years ago it was, but back in the 90s when I went to school, it was completely different than what I see now. And that's one thing, is a lot of parents, they think about, well, when I went to school, it was this way. So, I mean, plus I also went to school back when it was, oh, heck, it was in the farm towns. We had tractor day at my high school, to where you were allowed to be late to school because of the line of tractor. So I grew up in a hick town. It was farmers all around, and it was great. But
right.
I now live in Northern Virginia, and the area I live in, there's been like the event that happened at Loudoun County with the boy that went into the girls' locker room. The fact of even private schools, when my wife and I looked at private schools around here, are pushing books about gay, queer, all these things. And then it's just that whole concept of, you have things to worry about with what your kids are learning in public school now. It's no longer just, hey, I can send my kid to school. And it's hard to say this, because to me, I'm sitting there thinking, and take no offense when I say this, but when somebody goes, oh, I'm a public school teacher, my first thought is, oh, should I keep my kids away from you? You know what I mean? So what's your take on this, as being a teacher for 15 years? What have you seen as the changes, and how do you see kids in public school then, now, and your thoughts on what needs to be done to improve that?
Yeah, so 15 years ago, just to kind of put it in perspective, just one of the first things is, you know, 15 years ago when I started, kids didn't really have cell phones. You know what I mean? Like that is one big thing from the get-go. You know, kids didn't have cell phones. Snapchat, Instagram, you know, TikTok, those things weren't even around. You know, my first year was 2009, and I believe, like, for example, the iPhone, I think, came out in 2007 is when it was introduced. So yeah. To put that in perspective, like, people didn't have smartphones. I mean, they were just coming out, but like most adults didn't even have one, much less, you know, the kids yet. And so to just kind of put that in perspective, how much things have changed in such a relatively short amount of time, you know, and since smartphones, since just the immediacy of information now with social media and even just with regular media. I mean, you can go on your phone and you can Google, you know, any question you have at the touch of a button, basically. And what that has done, while there's a lot of bits of that, what it's also done is it has given people a platform that they may or may not be ready to utilize. I wrote a piece last week about social media that, you know, you see all of these kids, like 10, 8, 7-year-old kids, you know, standing in the middle of the aisle at Walmart doing TikTok dance. And it's like, well, you know, technically, if you go and actually read age requirements, most social media platforms require you to be a minimum age of 13. And so when you have these 8 and 9-year-old kids doing TikTok dances, you have to ask yourself, well, why? You know, why are you able to even do this if you're utilizing these platforms that you're technically not old enough to even have? And so that's kind of the, I think, the climate that we're in now is one, there's information that is readily available and probably in a lot of cases too easily accessible. And then the other thing is that, you know, from a parenting standpoint, there are so many examples of, you know, just the family dynamic change. And we see it in the classroom. You know, I mean, yes, there's like you mentioned, some of the agendas that are being pushed in public education right now, and even to an extent in private education. And there are certainly those things. I mean, just like in any profession, there's always going to be some, you know, some bad apples in every seed. I mean, you're going to find, you know, not every doctor, you know, doing things the way that most would say they should be. Not, you know, you can find banker. I mean, every profession is home that are going to give the rest of them a bad name. My experience from, I've worked, just to kind of give context, I've worked as a teacher in 2 different states. I've worked for 4 different school districts. I would say 98% of the teachers that I've encountered or worked with have been great people that are legitimately doing their best every single day to try to help kids. You know, now, are there some just bad people? Absolutely. And I would never try to, you know, BS anybody and say that that's not the case. But my experience, like I said, 98% of people have been, you know, good people trying to do their best. Some of the issues that I've noticed, and really what has kind of changed my mindset, has been, you know, I got into education to try to help kids. And I mean, I think that's why most teachers do. But what I've kind of come to realize over the 15 years that I've been in it is that if we really want to make an impact, it's not the kids that we have to start with. It's the families. Because more and more, I'm, you know, kids coming from single parent homes, or they're not living with either parent. They're living with grandma and grandpa, or, you know, their parents were, you know, 15 or 16. When they had kids, and we have kids having, and so what that has created is an environment now where the kids that are in the classroom are not, they don't have values, they don't have morals. And so what's happening is, you know, like, for instance, I'm an English teacher, and so I should be reading and writing and those types of things, and I do, but I also have to respect and accountability, because they're not getting those things at home, you know. And so that's really a big part of the change. The other thing I think that a lot of teachers are having an issue with right now is the fact that teaching is one profession where a lot of the policy and the rules and regulations that are being decided by people who have never been in the classroom. You know, for instance, I mean, like in where I teach in the state of Florida, there are a tons of rules and guidelines on what you're allowed to teach, what you're not allowed to teach, what you're required to do throughout the year. And those things are being decided by people that are not teachers, never been in a classroom as a teacher, probably never even volunteered in a classroom. It's actually interesting, whenever we moved to Florida, one of the things that we discovered was, like, and I don't know about other states, but in Florida, so like the superintendent, who is the one that is in charge of the entire school district, they're like the leader of the school district. That's an elected position. So right. Like they don't have to actually have ever been a teacher, a principal, or any of those types of things. And so now the district that I work for now, we're fortunate that our superintendent was a teacher, was a principal, and all those things. But I've worked at a previous district where the superintendent had never been any of those things, you know? And so there's that, that poses a lot of challenges, you know, when you have people that are making those key decisions and they've never actually run a classroom to know like what is feasible and what isn't. And so, like I said, it creates a scenario where, you know, you've got kids that are more rambunctious than ever, that have less and less values than ever. And yet you're constantly getting new policies put on you that are making the requirements more unattainable than what they ever have before. And so teachers are, they're getting out. I mean, teachers are leaving the profession in record numbers. I mean, like, you can go on a school district webpage and go to the job opening section. And now, even now in February, we're in the middle of the school year, you're going to find most districts have openings because they have positions that they haven't even filled. Whereas 10 years ago, it was a struggle to find a job. You know what I mean? Like if you had a teaching job, you better hold on to it unless you know for sure you have something else, because there was way more people wanting the jobs than what there were jobs available. Whereas now, I mean, you can pretty much go anywhere and find a job. And it's because people are getting out. They're starting to realize that, you know, it's one of those situations where, you know, there's a lot of other things to be doing, you know, and that's, it's a challenge. It really is.
All right. So let me ask this, and as you notice, Mr. Pancake has joined us finally. So we are graced with his presence. So here's my question. And this stems from the fact of I have, as we discussed before, I have a son that I'm homeschooling. My daughter, she's 2 years old, which I've said multiple times on here. So I when I went to school, I didn't have a great opinion of public school. And this was back in the 90s. But of course, a little farm town school, the building wasn't that great. I mean, freezing cold in the winter. So the school district I grew up in at that time wasn't that great. For the most part, there was good teachers and all this. But like, do you think that it's the good teachers leaving now and the bad ones are staying and getting hired, because that's why you have such the exodus? Is maybe you have so many teachers that are trying to do the good thing, but you have these people coming in that are no experience. They're trying to push their agenda. And you get the lazy teachers, the teachers that want, because they don't have kids and their lifestyle won't ever let them have kids, they want to mess with somebody else's kids. I mean, for me, it's, you know, if you want to do what you want to do, as long as you're not bothering kids or bothering my family or the people I love, more power to you. Go off, do whatever you want to do, because my kids, we're trying to teach them values. My son says thank you and you're welcome to me, and I make sure I say thank you and will you please, and I try to teach them by using manners. And like you said, a lot of kids don't have that now. And I think the thing that, between the lack of good teachers that are willing to stay because of all the political stuff going on, and that's really what it is it's a political agenda from both left, right, whoever is running it, they're trying to push their agenda. And occasionally you do have people in charge that are sitting there saying, okay, well, let's throw out the political stuff and let's focus on what's best for the kids. But nowadays, that's really not the case. And like, I chose to homeschool my kid for an example, because he's in kindergarten now. They wanted to put him in a class for extremely autism kids because he wouldn't sit still. And they suggested putting him on medicine, and we said no. And they said if we didn't do that, he had to go to the autism class. My son, as a homeschooler, is already doing first and second grade work as a kindergartner. He reads, he's probably, I haven't tested his reading since we started homeschooling, but when we started, he was reading at a first grade, almost second grade level. And now I'm assuming maybe late second, early third grade level reading. His math, as long as he doesn't have to write, it is good, but his handwriting is horrific. I mean, but I can't say anything. I always joke his handwriting is as good as mine. So
that's how mine is.
But do you feel like that's why homeschooling is becoming so popular, is because the good teachers are leaving, and the good teachers are leaving because it's too much red tape, too much headache, where they could easily, I mean, with the online economy, and I know I'm drifting on and ranting with my question, but there's so many different routes to go instead of public school now that, and like you said, there's jobs galore now between the schools, public schools, private schools, tutors, whatsoever, that they don't have to be in the public school to teach.
Yeah, I think I'll use myself as an example. You know, I've, like I said, I've been teaching, this is my 15th year, and my wife is also a teacher, and she's been teaching a few years less than me because she stayed home with our boys whenever they were born and took care of them until they started kindergarten. But I mean, we're kind of the perfect example, you know, veteran teachers who are doing our best to do things the right way and to try to legitimately help kids and do what's best for kids. And we're looking to get out, you know, I mean, that's one of the, my motivation behind starting my account and starting this online platform is, twofold. One, legitimately wanting to help people, but also to escape, not have to teach anymore. I mean, like I mentioned earlier, I teach and I'm also a high school football coach. I don't ever see myself not coaching football, but definitely see a situation where I don't teach anymore. And it is because of just all the other stuff, for lack of a better way to say it, that's going on, you know? And that's what I see a lot of, you know, I'll speak to where I teach in Florida. You know, it's to the point where they're offering like sign-on bonuses to people who don't even have teaching degrees. You know, like you can teach in a public classroom without, like, you can have gone to school and majored in, you know, whatever, business, economic, whatever it is, and get into the classroom if you have a degree of any kind. And, you know, and that's not, it's kind of a chicken or the egg thing, where it's like, people definitely like to throw, you know, shade towards public education, and a lot of it is rightfully so. But the part of the problem is so many teachers are leaving. They're so desperate to at least have supervision in the classroom that they're now taking everyone. And so now you've got people who are sitting there in a classroom with 20 kids, not really knowing what to do with them, you know, and it's like, well, I'm here, now what? And so it's a challenge. It really is. And like I mentioned earlier, my experience has been positive as far as teachers go. I mean, yes, I've met some teachers that are just not great people, like you're going to find in any profession, obviously. But the ones that I've worked with, like I said, probably 98% of the teachers that I've worked with have been great people and legitimately trying their best to help kids. Some of the problems that we're running into is, you know, as the world becomes more and more modernized, and a lot of that not being for the best, you know, the public school is sort of left with picking up the pieces in a sense. And what I mean by that is, you know, for example, we obviously, like all schools, we have sports. Okay. So we have a bus, an activity bus, that has to take all the practices to be done by a certain time in the evening, because that activity bus will then take all of the kids home who do not have their own transportation home, which is a very small percent of people at the school that I work at, because it's a very low income school. And so what that means is that for about 95% of our high school athletes, they don't even have someone at home that's willing to come get them after their practice. So the school is charged with bringing them to school on the school bus, which is common.
Right.
We teach them all day. And I mentioned earlier, you know, it, not only is it the reading, the writing, the math, and the science and all that, but it's also teaching, okay, like, you can't cuss people out in class, because that's not what we do, you know? You can't throw things at little Johnny, because that's not what we do, you know?
Right.
You can't pick your chair up and throw it at the chair because she told you weren't allowed to, you know, go outside for extra recess time today. And these are things that most of the average person would laugh at, but this is really happening. And unfortunately, it is not the outlier. That is becoming more and more common. And so then, like, for the kids that are old enough to play sports after school, they have their practice and then they got to be taken home. Oh, and our school, every student gets a free breakfast. Every student gets a free lunch. And then the ones that stay after school, they get an after school meal of some kind, which may or may not be a full-fledged meal, but it's some type of food. And they're doing it, and that's certainly it's something that I'm thankful that our kids get that. But at the same time, I'm almost mortified in a way, because the schools shouldn't have to have all of that. You know, yeah. The families should be picking up their end of the slack as well. And it's so funny because, you know, like we do these podcasts and we do these types of things. And it's like all of us are the of dads who are doing things the right way. And so we think about these things. And it's like, well, what? Like, what do you mean? You know, but the problem is, unfortunately, more and more, like the three of us, we're becoming the outliers because yeah. we are doing what we're supposed to be doing. And I mean, like, I cannot even begin to describe how widespread it is becoming to have kids coming from broken homes. I mean, like in 2020, everyone talks about the pandemic and all those things. The real issue in our society right now is broken families. That is the real issue that we have to fix. And for me, that was a really a big wake-up call whenever I, like I said earlier, I got into teaching like most people because I wanted to help people. But you can't even fully help a lot of kids at this point because you have to start before they even have gotten to the classroom. It's about empowering dads to be active in their family. It's about empowering men yeah. to become strong husbands and fathers. And, mm-hmm. you know, for me, that was kind of the motivation to say, okay, well, there's what I need to do for what's best for my family, which is very likely to get out and then to ultimately then homeschool my kids. But then there's also, well, what kind of impact can a society, and it's doing what we're doing, like doing these podcasts, writing content and building courses and, you know, all of the things that we're trying to do because people need help. Like not having strong fathers, that is becoming an alarmingly large problem in society right now.
Yeah, absolutely. That's kind of like some of the things you're talking about. It's crazy to think how true that is, you know. I think it was, I was listening to Jordan Peterson the other day, and he was talking about, you know, it is your job as a parent by the time your child is 4 years old, at a minimum, to be capable of being around others where those other people actually enjoy the time with your kid and aren't just like, get away from me. You know, sure. At a minimum, by 4 years old, your child should be pleasant to be around. You know, and that's true. And the thing is, I look at a lot of the people around where I live, and it's absolutely true. These kids, you know, my daughter's five, so I'm starting to hang around other parents that are five and six and stuff like that. And some of their kids, they're all right for like the beginning too. You know, you get those new people jitters, so you're polite and manners. And then as soon as they get comfortable, man, it's like out all their manners and everything out the window. Whereas my daughter, is manners till the end, never slides for her manners, never sets aside her manners, is very polite. I mean, she's five, so she's gonna have fits, you know, she's a 5 year old, but I mean, she knows better than to run around and go poop. You know, she knows much better than that, you know, because we right. tell her not to, where the other kids are like, hey Siri, play the poop song, do 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 do, poop 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 poop. And it's like, come on, you know, those little simple things are what make your children be, you know, reasonable. So you teach your kid how to say, hey, Siri, play the poop song. And haha, it's funny to pinch my nipples and do stupid stuff like that. And you basically teach your kid to be an a-hole. And then they go to school and you're asking these teachers to handle them for 8-9 hours a day. You know, now, well, then the teacher is like, don't do that in my classroom. And then the kid goes to the teacher or goes to their home and tells, oh, mommy, daddy, the teacher did this to me. And then the teacher goes to school. Now the teacher's, you know, effed up or fired or yeah. whatnot. And that's inappropriate. And that's a position on the parents. You know, it seems like society not only has taken a turn towards the broken home family, but it is also even the non-broken homes, I've noticed the parents are just like, it's gone. Their minds are like off in the wind. You know, we have plenty yeah. of friends. The husband, my daughter goes to a very Christian, very conservative school. I mean, the only reason we go to this school is because it's one of the top five schools in the country. The entire nation is like top five. This is the only reason she goes to this school. And it's very Christian, very conservative. They teach actually in their curriculum. They teach the Constitution. They teach about capitalism. They teach the reasonings of socialism and communism, how they don't work, and explain a lot of that stuff. They teach that stuff, and a lot of that stuff is very important. But even parents that I from that school are like, one of the dads we hang out, cool guy. I go hang out with him, you know, and we bring our kids together to the park and stuff like that. But I mean, he's around all three of his kids, and one of them's at least as old as my daughter. And he's F this, F that, you know, so on and so forth. S this, S that. And I'm like, okay. I'm not going to go telling him what to do or nothing, but come on. You know, that's how that starts. So that's just, it's crazy to me how that stuff goes on. It's like, come on. You have got to, like, step aside and be better than that, man. This is a five-year-old kid.
yeah. It's one of those things where, I mean, as husbands and fathers, like, we're leading our family, and whether that's good or bad, exactly. we're leading. You know, people forget that there is such a thing as bad leadership. You know, leadership is not always positive. And, you know, I'm consciously aware of that. You know, I mean, I mentioned this might have been before you were able to hop on. I have three kids. I have a daughter who's 22 now, and I have twin 13-year-old boys. And I've been very fortunate. I've had my boys in my class, not all day, obviously, but at least at some point throughout the day. And I mean, and my kids are not perfect by any means, but I mean, they're good kids. And, you know, every single day I'm reminded of how lucky I am that my kids are good kids. But then I also think, well, it's not just luck, though. It's also the work that my wife and I do to build a strong home and a strong family. Right. And absolutely. These kids just don't have it. They don't. And you mentioned something in there that I wanted to expand upon. You know, when the kid goes home and complains to mom and dad, and then mom and dad wants to be mad at the what's happening. Yeah. When I was growing up, you know, I would get in trouble, not because I was, you know, the best kid necessarily, but I was terrified that they were going to call home because I knew that my parents would not put up with that. I mean, my parents were those people. If you're going to behave anywhere, you're going to behave in public. You know, you're not going to be at school or be at the store and make a fool of yourself.
Absolutely.
Like, because there was going to be accountability. And
teachers were entrusted with that, with your, they were, it's like police officers. They're entrusted. We provide them the entrustment of the public. We give them the power to, and entrust them with the power to police us. You know, it's the same thing with teachers. You know, what are they there for? You know, you trust them to handle your kid, teach them not only math, but maintain their presence in the classroom as a polite child and manners.
So, from a safety standpoint, you know, like, just like with police, I mean, you know, if Johnny's throwing a fit, I mean, and I teach middle school, so, you know, fits are relative to age, but, you know, if Johnny is throwing a fit, well, little Susie's parents are trusting that I'm going to keep her safe, you know?
Right.
And in order to do that, might mean that I have to treat Johnny a little bit differently than what you do at home.
Yeah.
Because he has to understand that maybe at home he cusses you out because you don't do anything. That's not going to fly here. You know, that's not going to work. And so that is a big part of it too. The other thing is, like, and I touched on this a little bit earlier, you know, like, and every state is different because, you know, we're originally from Missouri and it was different Missouri, but down in Florida, like superintendents, you know, they are elected. So if they want to stay in office, so to speak, they have to get the votes. And you are naive if you don't think that that plays a role in the decisions that they make. Oh, you know, I can think of multiple examples.
Yeah. Where I live in the panhandle, so I'm in Florida too.
Okay. Oh, cool. Yeah. You popped on. I teach. We're about in the middle of between Tallahassee and Jacksonville, right in the middle of those two.
Okay. And I live by Pensacola. So.
Okay, cool. And so anyways, you know, a kid might do something wrong, might even get disciplined by the principal's administration.
Mm-hmm.
They go and parents goes and talks to the superintendent. Superintendent doesn't want to make the parents mad because they're voters. You need to do something about them. We're not suspending them or you know, whatever it may be.
Right.
And so it's like, okay, so, and in the state of Florida, the superintendent doesn't technically have to have ever even been a teacher or principal or anything.
I mean, literally just voted in position.
Yeah, they could have been voted in from the bank. They could have been the bank manager that got voted in to be the superintendent, you know?
Yeah.
And it's like, it's so interesting to me because it's like, I would never go to my bank and be like, you know what? You're not running this bank right. Let me tell you how to do this. You know, But yet, yeah, that's what happens with schools. Everybody mm-hmm. comes to the school. You need yeah. to do this. You need to do this. And it's like, well, what you're finding now is the veterans who kind of know what to do. They're just like, we're done. I don't need this. Like, yeah. we don't make enough to deal with yeah. this. You yeah. know, that's so true. You're getting younger and younger yeah. teachers. Yeah. And a lot of times ones that yeah. don't even have a degree in teaching.
And those students immediately learn from that if, as long as I just go complain or tell daddy, I can get away with whatever I want. And that's absolutely. What happens. Yeah. And you know what's funny? When I lived in Georgia, the coroner was a voted in position. The coroner. That's a pretty odd position to have a voted in position. They would vote right. in the coroner. The coroner. The county mm-hmm. coroner. That's so weird. Oh, yeah. Yeah, he's dead, I guess.
Right.
Sorry. Well, here, spoil again.
Let me get us back on topic here because, you know, like, obviously I'm going to push homeschooling as much as I can because, one, where I live in Northern Virginia, if you're sending your kids to public school, then there's no school here that doesn't have the LGBTQ flag in it, and it's pushing every agenda that you most reasonable parents don't want their kids on. But you said something that kind of made me think about this, about where, as a homeschooler, I keep getting told from kids, parents that are sending their kids to public school, well, how can you teach your kids? You're not a teacher. How can you teach your kids? You do this. Like, my full-time position is I design food service restaurants. I've trained salespeople. I've done a whole lot of weird stuff in my life for work. And most comments I get is, what makes you qualified to teach your kids? Well, I know this, this, and this. I can also read. I can also know what topics I want to teach them. But here's where my question goes in is, you said a lot of these parents are coming in saying that they know better on how to run it. And I believe, like we discussed earlier, you know best for your child, or you should know best for your child.
Sure.
I don't think that's always true for a lot of parents nowadays, which I think is very sad, because I think the reason there's such a need for people like us, people call it dads, you that's doing the Dynasty and Dynasty Fit. Is it Dynasty Fit or Fit Dynasty?
It's Dad Fit Dynasty.
Dad Fit Dynasty. And Mr. Pancakes, whole Pancakes with Your Dad. There's a reason that we are a growing culture, in the sense of so many families are going without having parents involved, where they're sitting there just literally phone in hand, they're looking at their phone, they're looking at their screens with their kids around. You know, if you're at work and you're looking at your emails on your phone, or you're doing something during a meeting, that's one thing. But while you're with your kids, and that's the thing, is a lot of parents are more interested in being on their phones. And I've even seen, like, when we go to church, I've seen adults sit in church playing on their phone. And I'm sitting there going, why even be here if you're going to play on your phone? So, I mean, there's that whole concept there that it seems like more parents are checking out. And the mothers are focused on YouTube, TikTok, all these things here. They want to get that acknowledgement that they feel they should get.
TikTok.
And you have dads who aren't really as much better, because they're focused on, how do I look to the public?
Right.
How do I want to go out and have some beer with my buddies? Or where, don't get me wrong,
oddly,
I
used pornography.
Pornhub
and stuff on this thing. From a lot of the stuff that I read, a lot of stuff I see on social media, pornography on the phone is like a detrimental thing to men. And it is taking off for men. Like, men are like, porn, yeah, because it's so accessible.
Oh, yeah. Right?
It's hard to look away, you know. It really is.
Where do you stand with all this? I mean, what do you think might be something men, as the leaders of their families, can actually do to, one, get their family to step up, one, get themselves to stand up, other than obviously following us, listening to us, and taking the tools that we have to suggest? What do you find, as, because you see like a whole range of families.
Mm-hmm.
And like you said,
absolutely,
you see low-income families, you've seen, I imagine, the average income family in probably high income families, all the range of it. What do you see that you think fathers in general should start be looking at just to get themselves back in the game with their kids?
I think it really comes down to, we touched just briefly a minute ago about setting the example and what type of leadership you are providing. And it's funny that you mentioned low income versus high income, because a lot of times, you know, high income families suffer from a lot of the same things. It's just they go about it a different way. And what I mean by that is you still have absent fathers. You know, it's not necessarily because they just have left, but it's because they're always going on business, or they're always outside of the home, and they're not home be dads. Yep. And I think a lot of it comes back to, what are your priorities? Like, that's how we make the change, by establishing the right priorities. I something that I'm pretty open about with just my own past, my own experience. I was 2021, so it's like not quite 3 years ago. I was kind of that absent father, not because I was not at home, but like physically, like I had allowed myself to get so unhealthy that I was, you know, just not a good husband and father. I had allowed myself at one point to get up to almost 500 pounds and just was not living a healthy lifestyle at all. And it affected my marriage and it affected the relationship I have with my kids. And for me, I was thrown into a wake up call moment because I almost passed on COVID pneumonia. Like, I spent 6 weeks in the hospital. It was a whole mess. What I realized, though, was that it was the priorities that I had to change. And the problem is that not everyone's going to get that over the head, like knock you in the head kind of wake up call. They have to just kind of figure it out on their own, which is why for me, you know, I remember there was a point where I was laying in the hospital and thinking, man, if I make it through this, I'm going to write a book to help people learn from what I've made mistakes on. And then I kind of shifted from that to, I don't necessarily want to just write a book. I want to like interact, like what we're doing now. This is more interactive, you know, being able to discuss what I've done, discuss how to fix things, and to be able to even like get into coaching where one-on-one working with people. And it really just comes down to the priorities that you have, you know. And it's so weird because like the three of us, I'm sure, are very similar in that we want the best for our family and we're willing to do whatever it takes to give the best to our family. But we always have to remember we are the exception, unfortunately. Like, it's a matter of us being what our, it's not so much the knowledge, but it's the mindset. And we have to instill our mindset into other people so that they are willing to do what it takes, so that they're willing to say, I'm going to put down my phone. I'm not going to watch Pornhub for 5 hours today. You know, I'm going to go outside and play with my kids. You know, one of the things in my house, my boys are 13, so they're a little bit older than it sounds like your guys' kids. My boys, they work out with, they are my workout. We have a little, I'm technically in our little spare bedroom right now, sitting on our weight bench. That's what I do the podcast and stuff on. That's what I have. And so like, we've got different dumbbells and we've got a weight bench and we work out together. There's days where we will also, like, I have the benefit of the school gym where are the school weight room. We can go down there. My son, one of the two of them, he plays football. Obviously I coach football. And so we work on football stuff all the time. But it's the that aspect of I'm involved with what they're doing, you know.
Yeah.
And even to, I would say, take it a step back even before that, showing them what a good marriage looks, you know, because if we really want to make a difference, it's not just this generation, but it's taking the kids that we have now so that the next generation, they're out there being good husbands or being good wives, you know, because that is how we really can make lasting change, is taking the kids now, so that when they're our age, they are building, you know, homes that are not broken and they're not single parent and they're not kids that's seen getting pregnant and all those types of things. And so I think that really is how we make the impact that we're trying to make.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, some of the, honestly, a lot of the ways, and I know my way of some of the things that I believe may not be well received by a lot of people. With how we make a lot of things better. Well, the obvious is, you know, counter social media, you know, social media, you know, we counter the social media that they have, you know, they want to portray all this nonsense and push all this stuff into our social media, breaking us up and teaching us about porn and blah, 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 blah. We counter that, you know, we counter it with what we do. So we honestly, we need more of people like what we do. And we don't need them only on the men's side. We need them on the women's side as well. Because And this is probably the part of where most people or a lot of people will get up in arms about what I say. 50% of the problem is women. You know, when you go to a 22-year-old girl and you ask her, or a 23-year-old girl, and you ask her what her body count is, she should look at you and go, I've never killed anybody. Why would I have a body count? What does that mean? She should have no idea that it means with how many people she slept with. She should not give you a number. You know, that's not okay. You know what I mean? But apparently their body count is now a thing. That's like, it's in the media. So
yeah.
this is where 50% of the problem is females, is women. And it comes, a lot of it comes from media, social media, you know, a lot of Hollywood stuff, a lot of people like Cardi B and all that stuff, you know, with the songs and stuff like that. They make it cool to talk like that and act like that and be like that. And that's not cool at all. So that's one part of it. And the other part is, I know a lot of women and left-wing people don't like Andrew Tate, but Andrew Tate is kind of one of the guys that kind of got me a little bit on the, snapping out of it stage. I didn't completely snap out. I snapped out of being the bad person when my kid was born, but I snapped out of being worthless and being lazy and, being the type of person that's going to value my wants and needs over my child's and family's. So a lot of the stuff he says, you know, I watch a lot of stuff he says, he's the one who snapped me out of it. And it's by being, you know, rude and abrasive by what he says. You know, he says, don't be a B-I-T-C-H. Quit being a wuss, you know.
Right.
Grab yourself by the nuts, sack up, and be a man, you know. Quit it. And that kind of got me to go, you know what? He's right. You know, yeah. As a man, you need to grow up, you know. You're supposed to suffer. You're designed to suffer. You're designed to feel the pain. Work hard and build something. You know, people that don't work hard and people that just get on with life, what do? They go backwards and they just become lazy nothings and they, you know, just become nothing, you know. So that's where a lot of some of the stuff he says, it may be abrasive. And he said some stuff that is not so good, but majority of the stuff he said, he's not wrong, you know. He just says it very abrasively.
I'm going to jump in here.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm going to jump in here because you said one thing that where about the celebrities and all this. You know, it's easy to say, oh, well, the celebrities are pushing this mm-hmm. message and doing all this stuff. It's easy to say that and put the blame on there. But mm-hmm. the one thing that, in my opinion, comes down to it is, like, my kids will, there's going to be celebrities that come and go. There's singers and all this that I used to love when I was growing up that probably they haven't done anything in a couple decades. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
The fact is using the celebrities as a point of contention is one thing because,
mm-hmm.
but it's almost like saying, well, my kids, they see all this stuff on the phone. Well, take away their phone.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's an example is my kids, I took away the phones and, mm-hmm. the only entertainment they get is what is on the big TV for maybe an hour or two at the end of the day, and that's it. Right. But I also watch what they're consuming, mm-hmm. and it's obviously going to be different. Like, Jake, your kids being 13, they're going to watch stuff without your knowledge, most likely.
Yeah.
My kid coming up to being 6 years old, he's 5 now, my 2-year-old, mm-hmm. I can monitor and control what they see more, correct me if I'm wrong on this, Jake, because obviously you have the older kids, so you have more experience on this,
mm-hmm.
but it's a matter of how you teach them, how you raise them to sit there and say, okay, wait a minute, you know, I like the melody of that music, but wow, those lyrics are horrible. The message is horrible. I don't want anything to do with that.
That's the portion of, what I was talking about that explains the setting your own wants and needs aside for your family. Cause you're going to want to maybe go in the room and chill out and just throw the TV on for them, or the kid's screaming, I just don't want to deal with it right now. Give them the phone. You know, that's, you know, or you know, you want to watch cool stuff, you know, where people are like shooting each other and blowing stuff up, so you watch it in front of your 6-year-old. You know, that's where and that's exactly it. So it's both of those things, those two things. In my eyes, it's those two things combined. It's all that combined. Set your own self, your own wants and needs aside, and just simply don't let them watch that stuff. But in addition to, we also need to counter social media.
Yeah, I think there's no realistic way to guarantee 100% that you're going to just shield them from everything.
Right.
So like you were saying, the key is you have to instill the morals and the values so that they know when the time comes that this is not something that they should do, even when maybe all their friends are. I'll give you a couple of examples. You know, we've moved around a fair amount because of, one, we decided to make a whole family, you know, move from Missouri to down to Florida because, you know, my wife and I got married in Destin back in the day, and we always talked about moving back down here, and we finally decided to. It was the year that our daughter was graduating high school. Our son, who at the time was going through cancer treatments, he was done with all that, so he rang the bell right within a month. So it was just kind of like, hey, if we're going to do it, let's do it. So we've moved. And so one of the things, obviously, to try to help our boys stay in contact with their friends that they've met from different places, you know, is like online video games. We let them play sometimes. We don't sit there and let them binge play and all that, but they do play because that's a way for them to stay in contact with their friends, especially the ones that they don't see all the time anymore. So it's probably a couple weeks ago. I don't remember what I was doing. I was doing something around the house, and my one son was in their bedroom, and he was playing video games with his friends, and they were talking, and the other kids were like saying a bunch of inappropriate stuff and all this type of this thing. And I was listening, and my son, he said something that was like he knew that he shouldn't have said, and I jumped his and I was like, all right, like, what do you think you're doing? And he's like, and he immediately was apologizing because he knew, like, he knew what he said was wrong. And so he was like, I'm sorry. He's like, I know I should have said that. I was just trying to fit in. And he said that. And so that was the truth. All right. And so I told him, I was like, I get it. I was like, but here's the thing. They might do that. That's not what we don't do that. And I told him, I said, if that's what you have to do to fit in with them, then those aren't the people for you. And he was just like, I know. And he was like, and he hasn't, you know, and that was a very outside thing for him. He got caught up because, like, no kids are going to be perfect. And no matter how much we try to instill things, they're going to make mistakes. But the key is I wasn't binge drinking or in the other room watching porn on my phone all night. I heard what happened. And I was really in there. And I caught it, and I called him out on it. You know, the other example, and I've made a post about this on Twitter before. So our daughter, she still lives in Missouri. She lives with her grandma. Mm-hmm. And this is a few months ago. We got she called my wife and I, a group chat or group call or whatever. And she was like, whatever they call it nowadays, where they're not dating, they're talking or whatever it is. I don't exactly get it. But so she's like dating this guy or whatever. And she said, she's like, yeah, I dumped him. I'm not with him anymore. I was like, okay, well, why? Like, what happened? She's like, he was always calling me when he's supposed to be at work and he was late for work. And I would tell him, like, well, aren't you supposed to be at work right now? And he's like, oh, it's all right. It's no big deal. She's like, I can't date somebody who has a bad work ethic like that. And it's like, that's
good.
Good. Heck yeah.
That's everything. You know, it's like, so she doesn't live with us anymore. But the values, the morals that and the standard that we have given her, it's gone with her, you know?
Right.
Is she perfect? No, she's not perfect. But she's getting there. She called us yesterday to tell us how proud she was. She built a bookshelf by herself. Nice. And I was like, well, man, that's awesome. I'm proud of you. And she was with one of her friends. She looked at her friend and was like, see, all I need is for my parents to tell me how proud they are of me and everything's good. Like that's a lot of times that's all they, you know? And so, whether they're 13, 22, kind of my, not really a harsh take, but my quote unquote harsh take is you post thing about you only get 18 summers with them. I think that's completely stupid. Like, I'll just say I don't agree say that when they turn 18 that your job as a parent is done is complete nonsense. Our daughter is 20. She still talks to us almost every day. Maybe not every day, but almost every day. We, you know, I got Snapchat because of her. We send each other stupid Snapchat pictures all day. And I've even now gotten to where, like, she at her job, her coworkers are always wanting to know when I'm going to send her the dad joke of the day, you know, like that type of stuff. So it's like, you know, that's one thing where it's like, your job is not done because they turn 18. And like, and I know some people are probably putting it that way just because they're trying to make it look catchy, but it's like, you don't only get 18 summers. And anyone who says you do, they either are lying or they just don't get. So, you know, it just, it's a constant, you know, thing.
See, I think part of that comes also with the mentality of this whole, I'm going to be my kids' friends.
Yeah,
right.
I mean, and I've made this point, and I've written an article that I put on the Call with Dad's website. I posted it on social media everywhere I can. In fact, I'll probably do it again just because I like to drive this point. But the fact is I think that a lot of this comes from that mentality of, well, I'm my kid's friend, so I only have so long with him. Because look at most people, I can promise, like my best friend, I talk to once every couple months, the friend I had growing up. I mean, literally, and I've said this before on the show, that he broke both his arms, healed, went through therapy, was better, had a little crick in his shoulder still before I even found out he broke his arms. I mean, he's still one of my best friends, but it's out of all the people I've met through my lifetime, I've had close friends. I've had friends that I just thought was family who just vanish in time. And friends, the concept of friends, they're not permanent mostly. You have some friends that are permanent, but when you think of your kids like your friends, one, that seems creepy that you want to be friends with a little kid.
Yeah.
But just taking that out of the picture, if you treat your kid like a friend, you're not going to discipline them because you don't discipline your friends. You don't steal your friends' values. You influence them and you do all this. And I think this gentle parenting is, from what I'm hearing, is being called where you talk to your kid and you don't raise your voice to them and all this stuff. There's different levels of it from what I understand it. And I don't understand the most of it. And for life me, I can't even get somebody to come on to talk to me about it because they don't want to discuss their view of it. But because I've reached out to parents about it, but
too many people are ashamed because,
well,
you know, when you call them out on their BS, it's like, oh, well.
Well, that's kind of the thing is everybody wants to be friends. And like I said, we've had this discussion before. And Jake, let me ask you this. How many friends that you had in high school? Did you have a lot of friends, a couple friends?
Yeah, so no, I played sports. I was pretty popular. Like, I was the prom king.
All right.
So, nice. And with that being said, though, like, no, I don't, outside of, like, on Facebook, I don't really have anyone from high school that I would say I talk to regularly at all. I mean, there's a couple that I might, throughout the course of the year, I might text, like, once or twice. Most of the friends that I've made that I stay in contact with are people that, you know, I've met since getting into my career, most of which fellow football coach, you know, and then also a couple of the people that I've met online that I've really connected with are people that I talk to every day. Like, I've got a couple of people that I work with online that I literally, in some fashion through text or DM, I literally talk to every day, because they've not only become people that are online, but they become friends. But yeah, from high school, no, I don't really talk to anyone that regularly.
So my point of that was simply, if you're trying to treat your kids like friends, then you're looking at it as soon as they get out of high school and get out of the house, they're gone. Yeah. Now, my mom, my stepdad raised me. My biological dad, I made this comment where he was more focused on work and I was like a second thought. So I wasn't even sure if I was the second thought kind of a thing. My stepdad, he made sure he made it clear, I'm not your real dad, but I will whoop you I will put you straight if you get out of line. And I wasn't scared of him, but I knew if I got out of line, I was going to be scared. My mom, on the other hand, whooped me. She beat me if I got out of line. She held me down to the floor and put soap in my mouth for cussing. I mean, and at the time I would have said that was uncalled for. Now I definitely deserved every bit of it I got. I can look back and say, wow, I was a jerk.
Yeah.
My mom's also one of my closest friends other than my wife, because I still talk to my mom. We have that connection. We have that bond. And she wasn't worried about me being her friend. She was worried about me becoming a good person. And I think that's a lot of where this 18 summers comes from. Mm-hmm. So it's, hold on 1 second. I have to get this cat out of here.
Pause.
If anyone's watching, they can see. And the audio will have it cut out. But the fact is parents are so focused on being friends that my mom and the generation, most of the generation that raised the kids I knew, were right there and had no fear of whooping the kid's butt or putting them in their place. And I'm not saying every kid got spanked, but the kids that I've known that hasn't been spanked, the ones I know, they're not doing too well, or their level of discipline is, the ones that done well without it are the exception and not the rules. But those were also lazy parents, which I think is becoming more and more of a thing now, where it's laziness parents. The let's be friends is part of laziness instead of disciplining. Let's be lazy and just be their friends. Oh, they want to watch that show? Sure, why not? Oh, it's rated R or rated mature? Sure, why not? Instead of saying, no, you know, you're not jumping off a 10-foot cliff because your friends are. You're not. Yeah, parents need to set the rules. They need to be the bad guy. They need to be the good guy. They need to be the parent. And I don't know. I mean, am I off on this?
No, I mean, to me, a lot of parents these days, I mean, I would say, you know, me and you are more along like an exception compared to majority of the parents. Jake, you're probably more along the lines of what normal parents are, because your kids are of appropriate age as you are. I'm 40 and you're 44? What, 44? Yeah, and our kids are young. So we are, I would consider, an exception to society. Majority of parents start parenting around the early 20s, mid 20s, right? So those people, if you look at them today, let's say somebody that had a kid when they were 24 years old, now their kid's 5, so they're probably in their, you know, high 20s, early 30s, you know, so that they're I would say they're about 10 or 12 years younger than me and Eric there. So their generation essentially is a little bit behind ours. It was kind of when this whole gentle parenting and no spanking kind of started. And a lot of those people are now becoming parents themselves. And what's happening is they, in a sense, to me, were never taught how to deal with or confront conflict. And that mindset, that fear, I guess, that feeling of not knowing or not wanting to, because they never really got taught how to deal with the conflict. They don't want to deal with conflict. So when they have a kid and there's a conflict, instead of being the leader, being the boss, and regardless of the outcome of the conflict, because when you discipline a child, what happens? They come back, you know. Not every time, because after two, three times of the same thing, they kind of figure it out. But the first time you try and discipline a kid, as in, no, don't do that, they usually argue with you and fight with you. And the most parents don't want to deal with that. They don't want to deal with the conflict. So they start this gentle parenting idea. And when I know, as far as me, when I talk about spanking a kid or whooping a kid, I may say whooping its ass or whatever. I'm not actually talking about like, rah, you know, hand way back and whacking the kid as hard as I can until it bleeds. You know, for the most part, it's just a, you know, a smack. Hey, you know, it's just a way to put a little pressure just so they can go, oh, you know, that's not okay. And then dad's tone got a little bit louder. He's serious. I better quit. You know, that didn't make him feel so good. So that's not appropriate, you know, and I try to explain something to my wife when I was younger or earlier today or not today, yesterday. We were talking about that and she was like, well, I don't want to spank at all. I was like, well, if you don't ever spank her, she's just going to continue to scream. You know, you gotta do a little something. And I'm not talking every time she does something wrong, you spank her, right? The majority of the time, and I would say 9 out of 10 or even 99 out of 100 times when she does something wrong, for the most part, we can try and talk to her, explain to her what's incorrect, and try and work with her to try and correct the appropriate behavior. But there's always going to be that one time where talking ain't going to do nothing. It's going to need a little set straight, and you're going to have to set her straight. And I just was telling her, my stepdad, when stuff like that happened, my stepdad would like whoop my ass good. And then I would go, he would hit me, and I would be like, "Ow, Steve, blah, 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 don't do that." And he would say, "You better hush your mouth and go do what I told you to do." And I'd be like, "No, you just let me," and he'd be like, "Whap," again. And he kept doing it until I shut my mouth and went and did what I did. And I told my wife, I was like, "That is wrong. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to sit there and whoop on my daughter until she does exactly what I tell her to do. It take me 15 times. I have to hit her 15 times till she finally gets it." I told her, in my idea of a spanking, especially a 5-year-old and especially a female versus a boy, it's a boy, mm-hmm. whether we like it or not, can take a lot more than a female. I'm going to probably take my hand and I'm going to a little smack on a tush, and I'm going to grab her by her arm, and I'm going to walk her to her room, put her in her room and close the door. And I'm going to say, "Don't come out until you can behave." And that's the end of it, as far as I'm concerned. She understood the scenario. So that's kind of my idea. I feel like just parents are too afraid to do that because it's a conflict and they have to deal with it. You know, they essentially have to be the boss and they don't want to have to. They've never been taught when they were kids how to do that or how to be. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Am I off on that one?
You know, I think there's, and this is, of course, my point of view of it. And yeah. I think it's a matter of it's extremes. People,
yeah, right.
On everything, people are taking everything to extremes. Either you're in your kid's life and there's what now, helicopter parents and tiger parents and all these things, right. Where they're like, I watch my kids being young. I know where they're at all the time. I know what they're doing and all this stuff. But I'm also like, I can watch them on the camera and let them make their mistakes and do things like that. But there's people that are literally right there. And then there's the parents that are sitting there going, "No, I'm just going to let them do whatever they want. If they fall, they'll learn to not climb," or whatever it is.
Yeah.
I think with spanking, it also is, you have the extreme issue with that as well, where you have people that are so frustrated and angry that they're not filtering their, when their kids do something, it's not their kids, yeah, that they're really that upset with. It's
right.
Their boss told them they need to straighten up. It's their wife telling them, "Hey, you need to take out that trash. I shouldn't have to tell you." It's having to clean the dog's butt every time you take it out for a walk. It's all these weird things that just boil up.
Yeah.
And these people don't know how to release their anger. They don't work out. They come home, because it's been shown, if you don't exercise, if you don't, and I'm not saying you have to run a marathon and lift 250 right. pounds with 30 reps or whatever it is that's these people, these influencers are trying to make you think, go yeah. outside, walk around the block,
right.
Get outside, do something, download an app, work out, and then get away from porn, because porn is shown to increase the level of aggression on people.
Yeah.
I think people are not controlling their anger because they're doing all these things. They're not doing what's natural and they're not connecting with their kids. I think those are the extremes that are causing the issues of either you're a absent parent that's trying to be your kid's friends, or you're saying that you're being a good parent, but you're abusing your kids because you are doing it when you're letting your anger take control. That's why, like, a lot of people, I think, are trying to avoid this spanking, is because I think a lot of people either was spanked, like Mr. Pancake, you were saying your stepdad did to you. You very easily could have said, "No, I'm not even going to consider that because I was just abused as a child."
Right.
Or you could have gone the other way and been like, "You know, I turned out okay, so I'm going to do this." It could have gone either way, like I said. And
yeah.
I think parents, in anything in life, you need to learn where the medium is You need to learn to control your anger. You need to do things to make yourself healthy so that you can take care of your kids properly. Just like, you know, it sounds weird, but even for me doing this podcast alone, talking with you, Jake, talking with Mr. Pancake, the different guests that we have on, talking with the people that we have through X that or Twitter that we've met, and that's where we met you. And these things help us be able to, one, get views from you guys, get views from other dads. I obviously don't agree with everything you guys say, and you guys obviously don't agree with everything I say, but I can take what you guys say and say, you know, I never thought of that, or I never thought of it that way. And it's one of those things that a community of dads, if you can have it in person, in real life, that's great. Like me, I don't have that opportunity with how my wife and I moved a lot. We only have our neighbors as friends. All of our families are 8 hours away from us. So for us, our online community is the community we attach to quite a bit for different things. And we, with that community, that's what helps us be able to figure out what we need to do, because we can then see what other people are doing. I mean, so my whole long rant and babbling, I guess, comes down to people need to figure out where the right place for them to be is, and kind of find that community that they can latch on to be able to. And you don't always want a community that you agree 100% with, because that's just an echo chamber. Go ahead. I'm sorry to interrupt. Go ahead. Let me hear what you think.
No, I was just going to say, you don't want to always end yourself with yes men, for sure. I mean, you need people that will give you a perspective that maybe you can't see on your own. And like you said, that doesn't mean you're going to agree with all those things, but at least, even if you don't agree with that, to something else that you didn't think of, that you come to realize, you know. For us, you know, like when Barrett and I created the Dad Fit Dynasty, of course, like my account, the name is Dad Dynasty. His was like Dad Fit Coaching. And so we combined them. And the cool thing about with us is, you know, and we're building a community with that as well. Like there's the Dad Fit Dynasty community that you can join. And our big thing is, you know, he's a personal trainer / software engineer. And, you know, I'm a teacher and a football coach, you know. And so between the two of us, like, we can come up with a lot of things that maybe we wouldn't have come up with on our own. And so, you know, however you get to it, I think the more perspective you can get from different places is always a good thing. And I know, like, the people that I encounter in real life, they are really not on the same mission that I'm on. That's for sure. You know, the people that I find in real life, and not that there's anything wrong with them, but like one of my best friends from Missouri, we're hosting a men's retreat this summer. And I was telling him about it. It's like, we're going up to the mountains in the Catskill Mountains, and we're gonna go on hikes and like do some cold plunges, and we're gonna sit by the campfire, and we're gonna steaks and just do a bunch of manly stuff. And, you know, and he was like, well, that's a lot of that sounds good, but man, going for hikes and stuff, he's like, I don't know about that. And it's like, well, you gotta push yourself, you know. And it's just like, the average person is not necessarily interested in pushing themselves. And so I think that you know, finding community, even if it is online, that's how you do it. You know, that's how you can really figure out, you know, where your strengths are, but probably more importantly, where your weaknesses are and how to fix them, you know. And that's kind of the cool thing about, you know, and you guys know that having a partnership, you know, like you're going to be able to fill in the blind spots for each other. And, you know, and I write a lot about marriage with the content that I put. It's the same way in marriage. It's no different, you know. Right. If you found someone that had all of the exact same strengths as you, I always equate it to like a strainer in the kitchen. You're going to have holes in your, if all of your strengths are the same, because then all your weaknesses will be the same. And there's not going to be a way to catch those. And there's going to be stuff that slips through the cracks. And so, you know, it's so important for growth to find people that can give you, you know, different perspectives and also help you in those areas too.
Well, I mean, sounds great. So let's do this. We've kind of talked for quite some time. It's been a bit over an hour now. And I don't want to drag this out too long. I want people to be able to come back, and hopefully we have you on again so we can discuss more.
Sure.
But where do you want people to find you? If we're going to have the links for everything in the the description, but where do you prefer people to go if they want to ask you questions, if they want to find you or what so have you?
So the easiest thing to do is if you just search Dad Dynasty on Twitter or X now, there's a link in my bio to the newsletter. If you go to that, that's also how you get to like the podcast that we host through the Dad Fit Dynasty. And then also if anyone ever wants to reach out through DMs, they can book like a call with me through my Cal account. And then our website is just dadfitdynasty.com. So that's going to be where you can find more information about the retreat that we're hosting this summer. It's July, I think the 5th through the 8th, if I remember correctly. And then also some of the other stuff that we have in the works. We actually we're co-authoring a book right now, which is it's called the Dad Fit Dynasty Manual. Basically, it's like a daily digest, I guess, where you get like an action lesson and then like an activity to apply the lesson. We've got just under 200 pages of it. Obviously, we're going to fully get it out to 366 days because this is a leap year. And so right now there's, I think it's 50% off to order it because you can get it now. It's an ebook. And so you can get it. And then you get the updates each time we put another update of the book on there. So if you go to dadfitdynasty.com, all of that stuff is on there. So,
all right. So I appreciate that. Mr. Pancake, you have social medias and where you want to tell people where they can find you real quick.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, obviously the most common place is social media, you know, Facebook, Twitter, or X, whatever. I got LinkedIn, Instagram, and then True Social. And then the best place probably where is the most like local centralized place would just be pancakeswithyourdad.com. Find all the social medias, even connections to Call with Dad's resources page, everything you can need. There's a contact page on there. You can email me at info@pancakeswithyourdad.com if you have questions, want to add to the resources or whatever.
Perfect. And if someone doesn't realize it, there's a callwithdads.com where you can find our YouTube channel on the front page. We have just got the Rumble page set up. So depending on where you prefer to watch videos, we have two locations for you now to go watch both of these videos. You can watch them on both locations if you feel the interest. Feel free. But we can also be found on Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn. We just got a page up there, which is really not, it'll be active by the time this goes live. But so go check it out. Really, almost every social media that we have other than Instagram, and obviously we're not on Snapchat, but we're a lot of places. You can go and you can check us out, share with your friends, share Jake's information with friends, let other dads know about everyone we have on here. Call of Dads is all about building community and making sure that the dads that are listening to this or even the moms listening to this can find that advice to be better parents, live a better life. And everyone on here, me, Mr. Pancake, Jake, the other guests that we've had and the guests that we have coming up are more than happy for you to reach out and talk with them if you have questions. And they might even have services or things like this that we're doing that can make you have a better life. And you having a better life means you're showing your kids how to have a better life. So with that, I'd like to thank everyone for being here. Jake, thank you for being here. And hold on for me just for a second, but we're going to let everyone else go. And again,